Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, Monday, November 29th, 2010, we are delighted to welcome Kailash Ambwani, CEO of FaceTime. Welcome, Kailash. Did I completely mess up your name?
No, Lindsay, that was perfect. Thank you.
Okay, good. Yes, you, I get the confusion with the last and first name, too, so no problem. I thank you so much for making time to join us.
My pleasure.
So let's start out. People probably think of FaceTime, and they think of the Apple ads and being able to talk to people in real time. Let's talk about what FaceTime is from your perspective, because you were first, and you do something very different than allow face-to-face communications.
That's right, we do. But what we do kind of leverages that. So, you know, FaceTime provides platforms that large enterprises use to manage these new forms of communication. And the video chat capability is just the latest of these new channels, right? So we've been in this business for 10 years, and large companies, the financial services companies, banks, energy companies, the challenge that they have is that the world for them, the communication world for them, is completely different today than it was, you know, 10 years ago, right? It's no longer about email. It's about Facebook and LinkedIn and Skype and video and all of these different forms of communications. And they want to enable them. They want to allow their users to use them, but they have to do it with security and they have to do it with management. And that's what FaceTime Communications does. Although we don't do specifically video chat, we allow companies to benefit from things like video chat.
Mm-hmm. And so part of the, you touched on the financial industry. Do you want to talk a little bit more about, you know, things that might not be obvious to the listener about, you know, specific parts of the finance industry, for example, securities and exchange, and we think of Martha Stewart trial, right, where
right.
Insider trading could happen over an instant message. And how do you fit into the equation so that it makes it
right.
real easy for the listener to understand?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you send today, if you send an email to your broker or to your financial advisor and you get a reply from them, that email has a big disclaimer at the bottom, right, saying, mm-hmm. you know, don't communicate stock quotes, et cetera. So they're very specific and stringent regulatory requirements that all financial services companies are under with respect to monitoring and archiving all communications that they have with their customers and clients and with the general public. With email, hey, I can control email, it goes through my exchange servers, et cetera, so I can satisfy all those regulations. But when it comes to instant messaging, when it comes to Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or Skype, you know, channels like that, those are much harder for these companies to monitor, to archive, and to satisfy these compliance requirements. And that's what our platform enables. So with our platform, they can make sure that, number one, they don't have bad stuff coming in through these channels. They don't have, you know, hackers trying to attack them through these channels. Number two, they can make sure that confidential information or private information like account numbers and stuff like that is not going out through these channels. And number three, they can make sure that all the communication that's happening is being archived and logged for compliance requirements.
Got it. So now, compliance sounds like the rule of the road at FaceTime. So how do you... You know, one of the things that, you know, in leading up to the interview, we always crowdsource our questions, and we've been asking the community for input, and they really don't know a lot about regulatory standards in any kind of social web applications. And a lot of them, you know, obviously, you know, there are going to be people that think it's a good thing and other people think it's a bad thing. So, you know, in the industries where people, you know, have been using this for a number of years, tell me how you've balanced the... if there is any privacy issues for the individual versus the need to be compliant with regulatory standards.
Yeah, I mean, and you're absolutely right, Jennifer. That's a very delicate balance that our customers have to deal with on a regular basis. So it's really, they are subject to these requirements, these stringent compliance requirements. And by this, I mean our customers who are in regulated industries. We have lots of customers who are in non-regulated industries, and they're more concerned about security, because hackers have discovered that it's far easier to attack through these channels than to attack through email, as an example, right? Because email is usually extremely well protected, and people are socialized with email. So, if I get an email from my mom, which I frequently do, with an image file attached to it, I won't open the image file, right? Unless there's something in the text of the email that makes me comfortable that she, in fact, sent it to me, right? So people are socialized to the dangers of just randomly opening emails. Companies have good safeguards around email. So what hackers are finding is that email is not a very effective channel in terms of return on click-through rates and things like that. That it's far more effective to attack through social media, to attack through IM and those type of channels. So even for non-regulated companies, security is a big issue. Making sure that confidential information, inadvertently doesn't leak out through these channels is big issues, right? So, we're talking about compliance a lot, but I just wanted to emphasize that it's not just regulated companies who are worrying about this. It's also non-regulated companies, right?
Right.
So let me go back to your question regarding the balance between privacy and regulatory compliance. So again, this is something that our customers have to walk this very delicate line. And the fact is that they are subject to very stringent requirements with respect to monitoring and logging all this communication. And as consumers, we want that, right? I mean, look at what we've been through the last couple of years, right? We want to make sure that the people that we trust with our finances are being carefully regulated and are doing the right type of things. So you have to kind of balance that public good with the privacy piece, which is what our customers struggle with, and we give them tools to help them with that balance, right? So we give them the ability to be selective about who they're logging, to be able to do things like, say, only log messages if they contain certain types of information. Don't log, if I'm sending you a message, hey, what are you doing for lunch? Don't log that message, right? But if I'm sending you a message saying, hey, what do you think about this particular stock? Then you should log that message. So we have things like that in our platform that allow companies to walk this tightrope.
So where does efficiency fit in? Because, of course, it's not compliance necessarily, but obviously it's in a business best interest to make sure that there's not, sort of chatter going on what I'm getting at is I'm wondering if your platform allows for any kind of assessment or determination as to the conversation tagging or monitoring in such a way that allows employers to determine what sort of lack of productivity could be occurring. Are there other advantages from a business perspective that you feel are part of the product?
Yes. In fact, I'll give you an anecdote. We were talking to a state government. I won't mention the state. And they did an analysis of the traffic that they were seeing on their network, and they found that 84% of their bandwidth was being used for non-productive or non-business-related usage within their organization. So people, employees using it for watching YouTube or going on Facebook, things like that, right? 84%, and this is under, I mean, all these states are under severe budget constraints right now, right? So they were able to deploy our solution to throttle back on these type of uses so they could free up bandwidth for other services, right? So yeah, we absolutely do run into that. There is a level of concern about productivity, but quite frankly, it's not the primary concern. That's not what our customers worry about primarily. That tends to be almost a secondary type of, once they deploy our platform and they see how much usage is going on, then they go, oh my God, I didn't realize that there was so much usage or so much of my bandwidth was being taken up by this type of stuff, and maybe what I need to do is dial it back. Not cut it off, but dial it back, right? Which they can do with our platform.
So I guess one of the questions that comes to mind, of course, is there have been, sort of IT monitoring tools for IT managers to flag conversations that are inappropriate, for example. So if a curse word is used or, other language around potentially a competitor or something else can be, monitored, watched, and then at some point reacted to if necessary. Does your solution in any way potentially provide a larger solution, but could it replace other plans or practices that are out there that are maybe very specific to just the listening component?
Yeah, I mean, I think so the answer is yes. And it does at our with our customers and the deals we do, that does tend to happen. But there's really what's different now, Jennifer, is the number of channels of communication has exploded inside the organization, right? So, for example, we all think of MSN, AOL, and Yahoo, right? And Google Talk. We track over 200 IM networks. We track 150 chat applications on Facebook alone. We track over 1,000 social networks. So it's not just Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an enormous amount of complexity that you've got going on with respect to the number of channels. And a lot of these channels are extremely difficult to look into because they're encrypted, they're evasive, like the P2P applications, et cetera. So the first thing you have to do is find out what is actually going on in your network. And, in every case, I can't think of an exception. Our customers are stunned by how much of this stuff is going on that they didn't even realize, right? And then once you can look in and you can see what's going on and you can open up that channel and look at the content, then you can apply all these other technologies that you're talking about to figure out what is it that's being said, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so, our core competency is being able to open this up and look in the content, and then we apply all these other technologies to figure out what the content is and what should be done about that content.
Interestingly, it goes without saying you've been ranked number one by IDC for 5 consecutive years in terms of security applications for communications or unified communications in your space. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So obviously highly respected in your field, and it seems as though, what we're seeing in a lot of areas, obviously your company is very successful, but other companies are getting eaten up by other, applications. So one of my loves is social media monitoring. And one of the reasons I asked you the earlier question about, how much monitoring can you really do, and given that you're already on IM blogs and over social networks and are able to help companies identify kind of the conversation that's happening and that, whether it's from a compliance point of view, productivity, or other points of view. But I'm wondering if your company if there are synergies with other kinds of companies, and if, in this space we can expect to see you say, merging with, or purchasing a company that does, social media monitoring and, as obviously your main product would be something for security, but you know, it becomes a larger solution. And I use that just as an example to kind of get thinking about sort of the future of FaceTime and what it will look like.
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the benefits that our customers see with our platform is that we give them a holistic view of all of the communications that their employees or any given employee is doing, right? So with our platform, I can tell you, you know, what Jennifer has been doing across all of the forms of communication, you know, so on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Gmail, on blogs and wikis, on instant messaging networks, over Skype. You can get a 360-degree view of their entire communication piece. So rather than having, you know, rather than having point solutions that give you a view of your activity on one app or one channel or one group of channels, we give you a view of your activity on all channels, right? I think you can imagine how powerful that is in terms of the, you know, the insight that you can get from that, right? And being able to see how your employees are connected, what are they talking about, what are the kind of emerging themes in their discussions, you know, being able to monitor for confidential information, being able to monitor for sensitive information, being able to monitor for inbound stuff. So this concept of giving you a holistic view is one of the core things that differentiates us from all the point players in the marketplace. You know, so having said that, with respect to the future of FaceTime, Jennifer, I tell people when, you know, and we're in a huge hiring binge right now. So as we're interviewing candidates, I always say to them that the single bet that you're making when you join FaceTime is that the way people are communicating is changing. If you believe that, if you believe that the way people are communicating is changing, you should pay me to work here. If you don't believe that, then there's nothing I should be able to do to induce you to join FaceTime, right? So, you know, I think everybody understands that there's a transformation going on in the way people communicate. If you look at the rise of Facebook and other social media sites, you know, we're always, if you look at the rise of mobile communications, I mean, there's a huge change going on in the way people communicate, and that means that there's a huge opportunity for a company like ours. So, you know, that's what we're focused on. We're focused on taking, you know, on basically capitalizing that on that opportunity, on delivering the platform that our customers need to enable these forms of communication inside their enterprise and to benefit from that form of communication inside their enterprise.
Okay, so talk to me about a piece of the pie that seems like it would be very interesting, which is any kind of information that you can use, even if it's in a shielded manner, in white papers, because it seems like you would get so much information back that would be absolutely fascinating. You know, and you, like I said, you might have to hide certain pieces of it or, you know, protect names to protect people. But what kinds of information can people garner or that you've put together that they can garner that is interesting or insightful in ways that, you know, they may or may not expect?
By people, you mean other companies or...?
Other companies. So I'm talking about sort of, you know, I know that you've had white papers that have struck me as really interesting before. So without loading it with my own bias about what those things are, I'd love to hear what you think in terms of what's interesting out there that you're able to cull together into a white paper or something else that's interesting.
I think one of the most interesting things we do is every year we publish our what we call our Web 2.0 application survey, right? Collaboration and communication in the enterprise, in Enterprise 2.0. And basically what we do there is we survey And this is a very broad-based survey. We don't just survey our customers. We do an across-the-board survey of over, you know, we get over 1,500 respondents who respond to this survey. And we talk to them about what are the types of things that they're doing inside the organization with respect to usage of these type of applications, social networking, voice over IP, instant messaging, unified communication, streaming media, right? And we're able to, because we've been doing this for the last 6 years, we're able to pull together and show how these things are trending, the usage is trending, and how attitudes about these forms of communication are changing, right? So I think that's one of the most interesting pieces of research that we publish on an annual basis. The other thing that we do is we compare that data to anonymous data that gets sent back from customers. So our customers have the ability to opt in when they deploy our solution. They can opt in to send back anonymous data to us, you know, showing the usage of these type of applications inside their enterprise, right? And it's on a purely anonymous basis. So, you know, all we know is that, hey, there's a particular location with 1,000 people or 5,000 people, and these are the type of applications that are being used in that location, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we compare that information with what our survey tells us. And what's amazing, Jennifer, is the gap that we've seen with respect to, you know, we'll talk to IT managers in our survey and say, do you think that you've got, you know, instant messaging or P2P running in your network? And they'll say, absolutely not. And then we'll compare that to the data that we're getting back from our appliances out in the field. And, you know, it's like 85% or 90% of these enterprises have P2P running inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that gap is very startling and tends to really get people's attention.
Yeah, there's so many things that are hard for the IT manager to control, but this is great because it obviously gives them a data point for them to say, wait a minute, maybe the solutions I'm depending on or using to report on are not the correct ones.
Exactly. So I mean, I'll give you a couple more data points. So in 2010, we found in our survey, 62% of IT professionals said, yeah, we have SoftNet usage going on, social networking usage going on in our enterprise, and our data, our real data from these appliances showed that it was over 100%, right? Or 100%, not over 100%, 100%. We also, for example, we can also show changes in the usage of some of these applications. So, for example, we found a six-fold increase in the use of Twitter in 2010 over the previous year. It went from, you know, 13% of enterprises using Twitter to 78% of enterprises using Twitter, right, over the span of a year. The other thing that's interesting is the acceptance, because we also survey people on their views. And I remember, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you know, when we asked people about the use of, you know, instant messaging and VoIP and streaming media, the common view was there's no business value and we should block this, right? Whereas now the vast majority of people that respond and say, hey, we do see business value, but we need to figure out a safe way to enable it. So the whole view that enterprise managers have about these channels has changed dramatically over the last few years. It's no longer a question of blocking. It's a question of enabling. How do I enable this in a safe way?
Right. Because, of course, you know, sales channels, for example, can be completely hindered if you don't allow, say, use of LinkedIn, which could be just considered a social network. You know, and a lot of companies block that, you know, and it amazes me when I go into them and go, oh, you know, if your sales folks aren't using LinkedIn, they're probably, you know, the wrong people or they don't have the right, you know, the right connections, but then you find out that maybe it's being blocked. What's interesting about what you say is obviously unified communications and VoIP have come up a couple of times, and we haven't really talked about that. So if you think about companies like ShoreTel, for example, how is it that you're able to provide information and compliance where necessary or applicable in that space?
Right. So, you know, with respect to VoIP and respect to, I mean, first of all, let me step back and, you know, people always say, well, what is unified communication? So we see unified communication as, you know, the convergence of these different channels of communication, right? So you've got voice that we all understand, but now increasingly you've got instant messaging, you've got web conferencing, right? You've got social media, so if I'm communicating over Twitter or I'm communicating over Facebook, right, if you look at what some of the announcements that that Facebook has made recently, it's really a communication and collaboration platform, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So unified communication is really the convergence of all of these different forms of communication through, you know, centralized identity, centralized presence, often a centralized client, although not necessarily, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, what we do is we allow you, again, to look at all these forms of communication. So, you know, and again, I've talked about a lot of different capabilities during this conversation. Let me talk about one that I haven't mentioned thus far. In certain industries like energy trading or utilities or financial services, there are regulations that restrict who can talk to whom within the organization. So, for example, in financial services, there's regulations that say investment bankers cannot talk to research analysts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our platform enforces or allows you to enforce these type of communications. So if I'm trying to, you know, use my instant messaging client on my desktop as an example to talk to somebody, if I'm an investment banker and I'm trying to talk to somebody in the research group, our platform will stop that conversation from happening and send me a message saying, hey, this communication is not allowed based on company policy, right? So that's the kind of thing we do, you know, and of course I've talked about monitoring and archiving and all those things. That's the kind of thing we do across the gamut of the unified communication set of channels.
Interesting. So one, you know, I think one piece of this is always, you know, you're obviously very passionate about the company and what FaceTime is doing. I mean, you're a very involved CEO, which is always exciting when talking to a lot of entrepreneurs and then kind of meeting up with them later and finding that their interest in their area is kind of whittled away or they've gotten further away from what their target, you know, their target area was at one point. You know, they don't necessarily know what the latest developments are. So you have 18 years in the consumer and enterprise software space. Tell us a little bit about the journey that got you to where you are today.
Wow. Well, I hope this is like a 3-hour blog session here.
You've got plenty of time. If you do the condensed version, I promise you.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you know, Jennifer, I started right from day one in this whole multimedia communication space. So, you know, I got to, before FaceTime, I was chief operating officer of a company called Genesys that specializes in conferencing, on-demand conferencing services. And then prior to that, I was CEO of a company that did web conferencing. So, you know, I've been on the bleeding edge of communications for the last 15 to 20 years. And that's one of the reasons why I joined FaceTime because, you know, I joined here in 2004. At that time, instant messaging was pretty pervasive, but not yet recognized inside the enterprise. And, of course, things like social media were, you know, just nascent at that point, although I think Friendster was out at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you could see that this was going to be the next big thing, you know, that the Internet had changed the way people communicate. And that was the next, you know, I mean, I always say the evolution of the Internet has gone from being an information medium to a commerce medium to today it's a communication medium. And the other thing, quite frankly, that keeps my passion alive in this space is are my kids. You know, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, And she lives on her cell phone and on Facebook. And she doesn't talk on her cell phone. She just does text on her cell phone all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I want validation of where FaceTime is going and, you know, our vision and what we believe in, all I have to do is look at my daughter, you know, bent over her cell phone or on Facebook, and I go, this is why what we're doing is the right thing, because this is how the youth of today communicates, right? That's the highly abridged version.
The highly abridged version. So in terms of, you know, transitioning to a space that I think started out really around compliance, tell us about where things kind of started with FaceTime. Because as you said, you've been in the business for more than a decade, I believe, now. And, you know, obviously everyone wants to know, where did things start? So from you know, being an entrepreneur yourself, and we have a lot of entrepreneurs listening, they want to know kind of the origins of the company. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, the company itself started in the late 90s, 98, 99, with really a different vision altogether. It was different but in some ways related. It was about leveraging the internet as a form of communication and being an application provider. So, you know, the company provided an application that allowed websites to interact with their visitors. So, you know, you go to a website, you could click on a button and start chatting, you know, click to talk, right? Click to chat
mm-hmm.
by technology, which is fairly common nowadays in most of the commerce sites, et cetera. And that's where the name FaceTime comes from, because our platform allowed you to get FaceTime with your visitors, right?
Ah, there you go.
Exactly. But, you know, after the dot-com bust, if you will, the company recognized that there was a bigger opportunity in the area of providing control and management for these forms of communication. I mean, we saw that these forms of communication were going to be pervasive, that they were going to supplant some of the more traditional communication mediums. And, you know, there was an opportunity to be the company that helps enterprises manage all of this. And that transition for FaceTime happened in the end of 2001, 2002. And at the time, our main focus was around public instant messaging, right? So you had all these big investment banks who were using AOL, MSN, Yahoo, et cetera, to do trading. And they needed some way of managing that and monitoring it and making sure it was compliant. And that's where FaceTime made its initial impact. And today, we dominate the financial services. In fact, 2/3 of everyone who works in the financial services industry in North America is in our customer base. So, you know, we've really been very successful. But what's happened is over the past several years, these forms of communication have spread out and become pervasive in organizations across the board. So if you talk to analysts today, they'll tell you that over the next 2 to 3 years, unified communications, it will become as pervasive as email. Every email user will have a UC client, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you that social networking, for as much as 20 to 25% of the population, social networking will become their primary form of communication. So, you know, these things are growing very fast, and you know, that's where we add value.
Interesting. So, you know, having been doing this for some time, and how long have you been with the company?
I've been here since 2004.
So I mean, that's a good chunk of the, you know, the last 10 years. What trends have shocked you, or platform use that shocked you? What's something about how your platform is used that surprised you?
You know, it's not so much how our platform is used that has surprised me. What surprised me is how dynamic the environment is that we play in, right? When I joined FaceTime, there was no Facebook. There was no Twitter, right? The ascendant, social networking was brand new, and the leader in the social networking space was Friendster. And there was a company in beta called MySpace, right? And, Facebook was just getting started in Harvard, but, nobody had heard about it, right? And today, Facebook has 600 million users. So that's the rate at which this adoption's happened has surprised me. The rate at which, mobile devices have become, one of the primary forms of communication for people has surprised me. It's just the rate of change. There's an adage in startups or in emerging markets, which is that, you always underestimate the time that it's going to take for the change to happen, and you always, the other way around, you always overestimate the time it's going to take, and you underestimate the impact it's going to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the case here. I mean, it's happened fast, but it's happened incredibly big, and that surprised me. I didn't expect the rate of change that we're seeing in the market right now. And that's a huge challenge for our customers, right? Because it's not just a matter of managing, these three social networking sites today and those four, UC networks or those two VoIP networks or that streaming media. There are new things happening every day. And when I look at my customers, when I meet with my customers, I ask them, I say, do you think that this is what it's going to look like 5 years from today or even 3 years from today? And they're like, no, absolutely not. It's going to be, there's going to be a whole bunch of new players that we haven't even thought of and new applications that we haven't thought of. So that's a surprise. It's a challenge for us, but it's also an opportunity, right? And our goal is to ensure that our customers are prepared as these new applications are coming at them.
Interesting. So in that respect, you talked about a little bit about hiring, and of course people are on Twitter going, what are they hiring for? How do I get a job? So maybe you can address that piece, because obviously it sounds like this is a growth space, and that's pretty obvious to anyone that's working in social networking and that sort of thing. But it seems to have, maybe who you're looking for might be a little bit different than people expect. So maybe if you could speak to that and maybe answer a few listener questions in that general category of who you're looking for and how to apply.
So the main thing we look for are smart, passionate people, right? So if you're a smart, passionate person, we want to hear from you. And we're looking really across the board. So we're looking in sales, both in field sales and inside sales. We're looking in marketing. We're looking for support people who, know how to support large enterprise customers. And we're looking for product management and engineering people. So really, there isn't a group within the company that we're not hiring in right now. And as I said, if you're a smart, intelligent person, we would love to hear from you.
So what about communications? Because one of the things, obviously, that's interesting about this space is that it's almost dead essential for most businesses. But FaceTime is not a company when I've, in chatting with people about, you're having this problem, it sounds like you should check out FaceTime and see what they can do for you because they have this great end-to-end solution for what their particular issue might be. So what about that space? And I know you've got Sarah there who is fantastic on your team, but how much does that even matter? Because, obviously you're a huge B2B player, but you've got, now your name is being used by Apple. Is there a point where, general public awareness is something that you're sort of looking for?
Jennifer, the most common question is I get when I present to customers or new prospects. It's, can I get that for my house? Can I get, I've got teenagers, can I get that technology for my home? everybody, and believe me, as you know, as a dad of 10-year-olds and 14-year-olds, I can completely commiserate. You know, because you're always worried about, you know, what are your kids doing, who are they talking to, et cetera. And so, you know, yeah, we think there's a big, you know, consumer opportunity, but, you know, we've got so much going on right now and such a big ramp going on right now that we're staying focused on making sure that our customers and our target audience, which tends to be large enterprises, are, you know, delighted with what we do. We want to make sure that we're serving their needs. So, you know, we have, you know, so it does B2C awareness help us? Absolutely, because guess what? The people that we sell to, the people that use our products are also consumers, right? So in that sense, it absolutely helps us. Is that an area that we see as expanding our business? Not at the current time. We just have too much on our plate today keeping us occupied.
Oh, absolutely. One thing I wonder about, though, is if there's a strategy or if you've thought about potential backlash to kind of the questions I was asking out earlier about the difference between personal communications between employees or outside and what's expected potentially of people that may or may not be correct. But that issue of personal privacy, which is sort of subjective and it's getting more kind of muddied as days go by, but that compared with, you know, with the, you know, the real need, to, for example, for companies to be compliant or other uses of your solution. Is there a sense that you need to kind of get ahead at some point to socialize solutions like this for people that, you know, the general public who may not be aware?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think people are pretty, well, so first of all, you know, our companies, our customers do, they think about this, they worry about this a lot, right, as you can imagine. But, you know, what we find generally is people are pretty savvy. People are pretty, you know, if you explain it to them and, you know, they're pretty reasonable about it. So, you know, our platform, for example, has lots of capabilities that where we show disclaimers and notices, right? So, for example, you know, if you're using our solution to monitor activity on Facebook, you know, there's a ribbon across the top, or there are dialog boxes that come up that tell you, listen, we are monitoring this. You know, this is our company policy. We're going to be logging this, so be aware. And if there's something very private that you want to be talking about, don't do it through this, you know, don't do it during business hours or don't do it on this computer, right? So I think what people get ticked about or upset about is when they're unknowingly being monitored. And, you know, our customers are very diligent about making sure that there are disclaimers and notices that their employees get when that communication is being monitored. Now, on the flip side, I think people also recognize that these are safeguards that help them, right? I mean, look, when I travel and I have to go through the security line, I'm not happy with all the hassle that I have to go through the security line. But guess what? I'd much rather go through that than not, right? I'd much rather go through that hassle knowing that I'm getting on a plane and I'm safe. And I think people recognize the same thing, is they recognize that, yes, I'm being told I'm being monitored, but I understand why. You know, I understand that the company doesn't want, you know, bad stuff coming in through these channels, and the company doesn't want me to inadvertently leak confidential information. And that, by the way, is the main point, is that our customers are more worried about inadvertent stuff than they are worried about, you know, malicious actions, right? I mean, if I wanted to steal confidential information, there's lots of ways I can do that. That's not what companies are not going to be able to stop me from, you know, stealing confidential information if that is my intent. But what people are most worried about, what our customers are most worried about, is the inadvertent leakage of this type of information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's sort of funny because, you know, I think about alumni networks. So I went to Cal in Columbia, undergrad, graduate, and Columbia does everything the old way, listservs. That's how we stay in contact. And I actually find that a lot easier myself than these. Cal has these just insane Cal Cafe. They've branded everything, and it's all in networks. And then I got a letter that there was a leak of information to a hacker of some sort. And I'm thinking, okay, what did I have there? Do I really panic? I mean, I probably didn't post anything that you couldn't find about me other places. But, you know, there are all these niche social networks, I guess I should say, that are coming up. And it seems like some of them with large user bases, for example, with large alumni networks, you know, things that are probably not very traditional kind of companies for you, should potentially be looking at a solution that does help them, whether it's yours or another, secure conversation in a much better way and also allow them to leverage it, because I'm not sure that they're able to at this point.
You know, that's exactly right. And I think what's interesting about that comment is also your observation that you know, people are creating all these custom communities and custom social networks, right? And that right there speaks to the challenges that companies have. You know, if I've got 10,000 employees, and even if 1% of them are using Cal Cafe as an example, right, you know, that's 100 employees out there, right? And depending on, you know, if they've gone to Cal, then they're probably in, you know, pretty important positions in my company. And by the way, let me just say, I'm a huge Stanford fan, so I tend not to comment on Cal at all, so.
Well, my grandfather went to Stanford, so you're in good company. It runs in the blood. you know, I have to say, you know, one of the things I wonder about is kind of, you know, the trajectory of the company. So I look at, you know, your homepage, for example, and I see, you know, there's obviously an interview with you, but and there's experts in the space, which are largely companies, and there's some faces in there as well. But you've got this top concern section, which I think is interesting. And one of the areas we haven't touched on, and I want to make sure we do before we run out of time, is, you know, you've talked a little bit about vertical industries in terms of you know, the financial industry. But in terms of some of the industries I've worked with or doing pro bono work or having clients that are in the nonprofit space to deal with children or healthcare or in any way, you know, under HIPAA regulation, that can be another really helpful area. Is that correct, or is that a growth area?
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely correct. And healthcare is an emerging industry for us, emerging area for us that we're putting a lot of focus on this year. You know, energy and utilities are another one, right? All of these have. You know, I mean, as an emerging company, we try to be very focused. So even though we have customers across the board, retail, manufacturing, technology, et cetera, we tend to focus our marketing activities around key verticals, right? So, you know, financial services, where, if you will, I think we've established a very strong base. And, you know, where we're focusing now is in energy and healthcare, because all of these, as you pointed out, have specific concerns that we can clearly articulate and address. You know, another one is education, you know, with SIPA and those type of regulations. I mean, there's a lot of concern over, you know, schools. They want to enable and allow these type of applications. But they want to make sure that children are protected. I mean, one of the great use cases of our technology is a school that wanted to allow YouTube, but not allow inappropriate content on YouTube. So they deployed our system, and now a kid can come in and they can say, you know, Michael Jackson, and it'll bring up the Michael Jackson YouTube, but if they search for Pamela Anderson YouTubes, it'll block that page and won't bring it up. And we can do that because we look at the content that's coming across and we analyze the content and say, okay, this is inappropriate, and we'll block that content. So that kind of stuff, you know, are very interesting use cases that we're seeing companies and institutions use our solution for. So you're right, it's much wider than some of the areas we've talked about.
Right, and I mean, you know, obviously working online, you have to know about COPPA regulations in terms of email opt-in and making sure people are the age they say they are. It used to be in the olden days we would just ask for a credit card number, of course, and everybody would give that to us, you know, not that, you know, if we were saying we weren't, going to charge them something, but that was really the only way we can do it, and it's advanced so far beyond that.
It really is.
And it's interesting, too, you know, you have this trending topics piece on your website. I'm wondering where you're getting that feed from. Are you picking those out on your own? Because I think some of them are things people may not even know about, like Facebook juror dismissed, journalists fired over tweet. You know, and it obviously shows that you're kind of on top of things. But is that a Meltwater feed, or where are you getting that information?
You know, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I don't know. I'm going to have to...
Does Sarah know?
She left the office a few minutes ago, so...
Oh, I don't know. She's too busy. So Sarah, I should tell our listeners, is in charge of communications at FaceTime. And I know Sarah, so that's why I'm referring to her. But that's Sarah Carter. And I think she has a presentation coming up at Enterprise 2.0. Tell me where people can see you and Sarah or any members of the team talking about this in real time and have a conversation about you for potentially purchasing.
Well, the best place, of course, is our website, right, facetime.com. And on facetime.com, we have a list of speaking events and speaking opportunities that we're going to be availing ourselves of. So that's where I would. That's actually where I would point people, as I'd urge them to go to facetime.com.
So you have a number of webinars coming up, I see, and they're on-demand webinars in terms of your events calendar.
Yeah, so we do twice a week webinar that talk about our solution, talk about the market. So you can participate on those, come see them live, or we also have that available as an archive. So, you know, you can look at past webinars, and they tend to be on specific topic areas like, you know, social networking and financials, or social networking compliance for government organizations in energy and utilities. So there's a lot of different topics that we do these webinars on, but again, they're available on demand but we do them twice a week live, which gives you the ability to ask questions and get answers right on the spot.
Now, are you the one that's answering the questions, or is it others on the team?
No, there's others on the team.
Yeah, I would imagine a CEO would have a hard time doing twice weekly webinars live. So tell me a little bit about the, you know, with the few minutes we have here, some of the team members that, you know, have really been a part of moving FaceTime forward, especially in the last few years.
Well, you know, we have 160 employees, and they're all part of a great team. So it's hard for me to kind of walk through and pick out specific team members. But I think we have a great marketing organization who does a phenomenal job with our communications. I mean, they're the ones, I think, who hooked us up, right?
Absolutely. You know,
we have a tremendous sales group and a support group that's extremely dedicated. And then let me not forget our FSL team. So I was talking about all these applications that we track. That's done by our FSL team called the FaceTime Security Labs, and they're the ones
And I was just going to ask you about labs, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I would urge people, you know, if you come to our website, there's a link at the top that's labeled Security Labs, and that takes you into our application guide where you can, there's a real-time interactive guide on our website that you can use to explore over 5,000 applications that, you know, we give you visibility on. And that's a really, really cool tool. You can go in and you can say, show me all the communication applications, show me applications that behave this way, et cetera, and it'll give you descriptions about it, et cetera. And that's our FaceTime Security Labs team that maintains that. You know, we have a great support team. I mean, it's, you know, again, in this type of an area with, you know, the sophistication and breadth of our technology, there's no one person or not even a small group of people. It's really the whole team. We pull together extremely well.
You were very diplomatic with that answer. Excellent. And I'm glad that you touched on labs because I think that if folks go to labs, they'll see the links to the specific areas that they can actually go deeper and get a lot of information that if they're looking at solutions, you know, helps get, tell them the story. One thing I have to ask you before we go, because we only have a few more minutes, is, you know, in terms of your name, obviously it's a huge deal that, you know, that Apple's using the name FaceTime. Has that been a good thing or a bad thing for you as a company?
Well, I think on the whole, it's been a really good thing. You know, we had to, of course, upgrade all our web server infrastructure before the announcement to ensure that it could handle the increase in traffic, and we definitely saw that. But it's, you know, it's driven awareness for the company dramatically. So I would say it's been a very, very good thing.
Any specific problems in terms of, I see you have a nice little spot on your website that says our name, FaceTime. You know, if you're looking for Apple, go ahead and go here. You can
Right.
find Apple over here, but that's not what we do. But it's interesting that, you know, they would choose your name of all names. So it's I guess a fortuitous coincidence.
Well, I mean, it's ideal for a video chat application, isn't it? I mean, if you think about earlier in the conversation, we talked about the origin of the name and what the company first started doing. It was along those lines, right? So, I mean, I think it's a great name for Apple and probably more appropriate for what they're doing with respect to an application, end user application. And so, you know, we're happy to work with Apple on that. And in fact, we're going to be changing the name, our company name, and we're going to be announcing that on January 11th.
Oh, very exciting.
Yeah.
You won't be FaceTime anymore, and that'll be interesting. So a whole new area for you to I guess you can leverage the traffic now and then, you know, see how that carries through in the new year. So any other trends, predictions that you want to leave us with before our time is up?
Nothing that'll make me seem profound. I mean, you know,
So
I
then
think
it's not worth saying. Well, I mean,
exactly.
you talked about your daughter, and I always, you know, I always ask this of CEOs, because especially if they self-reveal about children, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, in terms of every time I find a great intern, they generally are not huge Facebook users. Or if they are, they're already in the marketing and communication space, and they're using it for that reason. And I'm a big believer in generational marketing, so marketing, you know, targeting not just ages, but to, you know, to the specific messages that resonate within these communities. So I'm wondering, you know, in terms of kind of that question, if anything just springs to mind as something that, you know, like for example, for me, you know, how do you regulate what someone's doing on their personal phone versus their computer at work if they're in the financial industry? That's
Yeah.
probably something that you can't really answer, but at some point possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was being a little flippant with my earlier comment. I mean, look, the key trend that we see playing out is this convergence of communication and community, right? Which I'm a huge believer in. So if you look at, for example, what Facebook announced, was it last week, a week before, with their, you know, new messaging capabilities, et cetera. I mean, increasingly, I think, you know, we're in a world where, well, two key things. We're in a world where, you know, we form communities, like-minded, subject-oriented communities with people, right? And that, I think, in some ways goes back to who we're all about, isn't it? I mean, that's what human beings are all about. We're all, you know, we're all fundamentally very tribal in nature, right? And, you know, we all have a circle of friends, a circle of colleagues, a circle of peers, and that's how, you know, that's where our biggest interactions happen. So I think this community and communication convergence is something that you're going to see accelerate. It's already accelerating, and which is what I meant when I said it's not particularly profound what I'm saying. But we see that happening, and we think there's going to be new forms, new ways in which people in which this phenomenon manifests itself. There'll be new forms of communication that take advantage of the community aspect, right?
Right.
And so I think that's a key thing. And, you know, I think the second thing, which is definitely not new, is this blurring, and it's related to that, is this blurring of private, you know, your public persona and your private persona, right? Where does that privacy boundary stop? And, you know, I know that that is a generational, there is a generational change in how we view privacy, isn't there? I mean, I have a different viewpoint on privacy than my children do. And then even, you know, generations, and I hate to admit it, but there is a generation between my generation and my children's generation. But, you know, you look at the way that generation views privacy, you know. So I think, and again, I think that links back to this convergence of community and communication. I think there's this move towards, you know, we have in some ways, it's always been with us. There's always a group of people that you've had, your family, that know everything about you, that you're more open with, than your friends, that's a second circle, you know, than colleagues, that's a third circle, right? Those circles are becoming bigger. And it's just an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, the circles within circles within circles that touch upon circles. Very interesting, and I think there's, you know, a part of this is that sort of advocacy element that I love so much, that we learned so much about through the and politics aside, but through the Obama campaign, of sort of reaching everyone, that seems to be a consumer model, but it seems like, you know, in your case, being the leader, if not really only provider in this space, having something significant to say and advocate, either by companies or through their employees. So that could be an interesting part of the future. We'll all be waiting to see what happens next.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, Kalash. I'm sorry, I'm saying it wrong again.
It's, you know, it's all of those forms are fine. It's Kalash, but that's fine.
Kalash. Okay. Kalash. I want to thank you so much for being an A-lister now, being part of the A-list. We thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for your time. This was I really enjoyed this conversation.
Absolutely. So did I. Take care. And I want to thank each of our listeners for tuning into the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. We hope you enjoyed the program, and if so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you're listening on iTunes, rate us and let us know how we're doing. We welcome any feedback, of course, and we want to hear from you. Our next show will be a week from today, so please start tweeting or Facebooking in your questions now. We take emails as well, so get those in. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferlindsay.com. Have a great week, everyone.